Hello, everybody. Welcome back to this incredible episode of The War Room, part of the Clone Star podcast. I am your host, Mike Overton, and joining me in the guest co-host seat this week is the wonderful Jodie Pickens. Jodie, how are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on the show, as Sho couldn't join us. That's a bit of a, actually, that's a tongue twister, isn't it? Thank you for coming on the show because Sho couldn't join us.
He does that on purpose. Leave that one. Right? Yeah.
Now, our guest this week, we are incredibly delighted to have an awesome guest. They were the first non-binary actor in Star Trek. They've worked on some incredible projects such as Starfield the video game, obviously Star Trek Discovery, The Listener, The Owl House, and more. Our guest this week is the wonderful Blue Del Barrow. Blue, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you both for having me.
Awesome. Honestly, this for us is just, yeah, we love Adira, we love Gray. Actually, to be fair, I think we just love Discovery in general, don't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think anybody that doesn't love Discovery needs looking at. No. So I'll tell you what, Blue, let's go right back to the beginning. Age 9, you started acting.
I think so. It was around somewhere.
How did you get into it? So are you part of a creative family? Were you sort of pushed into it from your parents? Is it something you did on your own?
No one's ever asked me that. My mom is a teacher, but my dad is a pianist. He's a composer. Oh, wow. And so he left high school when he was 16. That's what he's done his entire life. So I had a good, you know, at least one on side. They were both very supportive, but I think I showed a lot of care for the arts when I was little. And there's this, I'm actually staying with my parents right now in California, and near where I grew up, there's a theater that just does Shakespeare. It's called the Theatricum Botanicum.
Yep.
And they have, it's beautiful and it's outside, and they have these summer programs for kids, and there's not much else to do around here. So that I ended up going there, and that was like the best thing ever for me.
That's awesome. So, okay. So pushed into it from parents, then that's what we're going to go with. So did you study act? Obviously, I know you have been to Lambda, you've been to the National Young Arts Foundation. So you've studied a lot, but did you study early on, or was it more of sort of a hobby?
It was more of a, I guess it would be a hobby earlier on. It was sort of, I've always been a very like serious person, and I say work oriented, which is stupid because I was like 14. Yeah. So it wasn't, you're not working, but my brain was always very like, this is the thing that I need to do, and I need to do it perfectly. And that's what life revolves around.
Yep.
And I think for a large portion of my life, that was acting. And it wasn't until I was maybe 15, 16 that I started to think about college, and the people around me started thinking about college. Yep. And my high school was very academically focused, so a lot of my peers were, you know, looking into these really wonderful academic schools, and I was like, I don't want to do that. I and my parents, who are not from here, they're from Argentina, were like, you need to go to college. You need a degree, please, 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 please. And I think I applied to one academic college, and the rest were just auditioning for conservatories, because I think I made that something like switched in my head. I was like, oh, I could just really go all in for something that I'm already going all in on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you also ticked the box as well, just to say, I've done it.
I do have a degree. It is theater. I don't know how
still a degree.
Much use that as, but I do have it.
Hey, as far as I'm concerned, a degree is a degree, regardless of what it is in.
Hey.
To be fair,
you said the school you went to, your high school, was very academic oriented, but was there an arts program within the school?
Yeah, there was. A lot of the students that go to the high school end up at really good academic schools, but the arts program is wonderful. The arts and music program of that school is really good. And we had a small little black box theater, but like amazing teachers, and like helped me so much. And I really loved it. And that was a very safe space for me. So I I give a lot to that, a lot of credit.
Yeah. I think
well, that's that good. Well, I mean, is... that positive experience in high school, like,
yeah,
causing you to kind of move on and want to explore that further. That's impressive.
Yeah, it, you know, I mean, it helps. Age. Like, you need that push from at least, yeah, you know, one adult or teacher around you. Because if there's nobody, yeah, saying that that's possible, and there was, right, my drama teacher there who was like, this is possible for you. And I've had other students do it, and like, I'll support you in it and I'll write you letters. And if there's, if you don't have that, it seems fairly like, you know,
yeah,
really out of reach.
Yeah. I mean, I tried drama at school and sucked terribly. So, you know, I was in one school production of Grease as a mediocre character. I struggled with lines, and you know, I was so glad when the final performance was over. I went, right, that's it. I'm never acting again in a million years. So I take my hat off to you, because you know,
it's like, it's so interesting though, because some of the, like, a lot of those people, some people will go into a play and end up like the same way that you felt at the end, being like, I never want to touch that again. Some will finish it and say, I want to keep doing exactly what I did. Some will say, I want to do that, but I actually want to be more behind the scenes, or I actually, yeah, want to maybe write what other people do. Like, it, I like how it, because it's more available to youth than, you know, a writing program is, or, yep, like, you know, yeah, learning how to be a part of a crew. So people always tend to start there and then kind of veer off. And I like watching that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I ended up doing music and sound production. So,
well,
and I've worked in theater productions for sound and stuff in the past. But awesome. Yeah, I would never get up on stage. Never again. Never again. Okay, so you went to college. So was that Crossroads?
That was high school, college was Lambda.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because then you came to the UK for, yeah, Lambda. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's only about a 40-minute drive from where I am as well. So.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Wait. Oh my gosh. Where are you around?
So I'm in just on the outskirts of Surrey.
Got it. Okay.
So okay. I'm actually in Woking, which is where McLaren are based. So if you follow racing, okay, at all, then yeah, so that's where I am. So just a smidge outside of London. So yeah, okay. I know that area really well. Okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were at Lambda when the audition came up for Discovery?
Yeah, I was in my final year. I was my third year.
So how did the audition come up?
So for the BA, it's 3 years, and the first 2 years you're kind of like shut in and you do everything within the school, and you know, it's just
you're locked away, never to see daylight again.
Yep. Really, truly, not, that's not an exaggeration. but it's great. And then in
I just got Sister Act vibes in my head now, you know that.
I think that's like the way most drama schools function. It's very bizarre, but yeah, it's very bubbly. And then the third year is mainly public shows. You're just doing public shows, working with outside directors with your year, which for me, ours was just like 29 people, I think. And I did, from the first show that we did in my third year, I got connected with my agent, Claire, who is so lovely and kind of like wanted to hit the ground running, which was great. So, but it was also very stressful because I still had an entire year of school left.
Yeah.
So it would be like, we'd have a show on, and so we'd either have rehearsal in the morning and then I have to go back and do it. And like in between that time, I'd maybe have like 4 tapes to do some days, which was like, it was great, but it's so much. So I remember the day that I did the Discovery tape because I had 2 other tapes to do around it, and I had about 45 minutes. And I just pulled one of my friends into a room and was like, I need help now. And bless him, he helped me with all of them and was really lovely. It was a good thing. And then I never thought again about any of the tapes that I did during that time because everything was so smushed together that I had no time to like worry about it or overthink it. I just completely forgot about them. And you also get sort of put in that place and in that mindset in drama school, maybe not intentionally, of like, you know, you might work immediately and you might not work for 5 years. You really, we can't know that. And we can't, it's not something that we can like tell you exactly what's going to happen after this. So I had no expectation of getting anything that I was reading for. For me, it was just like, okay, this is good practice for like when I graduate, I'll have more time to do this.
Yeah.
So getting and Discovery was insane because it was we I was it was a two-show day and we were between shows and I was having lunch and I got a call from Claire about Discovery, just saying that
Hey, what are
like
you doing?
well literally it was truly it was like well because usually it doesn't go this way, but it was the call was just that you got it and you're gonna do it, rather than they want a
Oh.
call back or they want to meet you or they want to talk to you. It was just from the tape,
Oh,
which
wow.
I didn't know was weird and then learned was weird immediately after. That's
So
not really usually how things go sometimes,
you
but
nailed it perfectly first time.
that's also
Fabulous.
how they hired Mary Wiseman, which made me feel really
Oh,
happy that it was just, yeah,
nice.
Mary just sent in a tape and they were like, we taking her now. Which but in but really insane. Really, really insane. Yeah, I don't know. It was absolutely crazy and I didn't really
I
believe
have to
it for a
imagine
while.
when you're at that final year of in
Yeah.
the bubble network that is an arts focused education, that to do this one off thing that you pushed in 45 minutes with two other auditions, that all
Yeah.
suddenly this is yours. Here's a role in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, were you a fan of Trek before the audition?
I don't think, and I had to like just be transparent about this from the start. I don't think I had
Sure.
seen any Star Trek when I started. So it was a mix of like, oh my God, this is incredible. And also like,
What the hell is Star Trek?
whoa, like I need to go watch so much stuff. I need to go watch so much stuff because I'm like, I love good research for a role, but this was like, it's not a role. It's
Lot.
been like something that's been going on longer than you were alive. So like,
Right.
it was so intimidating.
That's. I can't imagine. I
Oh.
cannot imagine.
I didn't
Especially at
know.
that point in your life. That's such a, like you said, it's a very hectic time. There's a lot of probably a pressure for so many reasons. And to suddenly be like, okay, you sent in this one tape. Here you go. You have this role in Trek. That's wow. That's
Yeah,
awesome.
I didn't know what I would need to understand, what context I would
Sure.
need to know. So it was sort of like, do I need to do everything right now? And I
Do you
tried.
think
Just watch
that now?
65 years of Star Trek in one go, one
I
sitting.
tried really hard.
It's only what? I think someone said it's like 1,000 hours or 800 hours or something. So I
Yeah.
mean, you could smash that in an hour, in an afternoon. What are you
Yeah.
on about?
Right.
Three,
Just binge
three.
watch everything all at
Yeah.
once. Yeah.
I mean, I look, I'm sure Adira could come up with some kind of time machine device that could resolve
Yeah.
that problem. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
Do
Would've
you think
helped.
that helped you with that role at all? Like not having that vast knowledge of Trek?
I think so. Weirdly, now looking back, only because like we meet them directly after an insane jump to the future where
Right.
the
Yeah.
viewers and the audience don't have any context anymore. So there was
Right.
kind of something liberating about that, as well
Yeah.
as well as scary, because then everything you do becomes canon and you're suddenly left with no guidance. Because it was, I think
Pressure
they
of
set up,
canon.
yeah, the
Yeah.
setup, this they set up that jump beautifully over the, like the first two seasons, and then once we got there, it was like it can play. But for me, it was like I don't want to move anything or touch anything or say anything, because I'm from this time and I need help to not
Yeah.
mess anything up.
So just to backtrack very slightly then, because talking about recording and auditions and everything else. So I'm going to ask you the Adam Driver question, which is, can you watch yourself back, or
Oh.
do you hate watching yourself back?
I can watch myself back. I think in certain circumstances it's helpful. Doing it alone, I think, is never nice or helpful, but I think if I'll watch something back if I'm doing a tape with someone and they're helping me and they tell me, you should watch this back to see what I'm seeing on this bit. But if it's just me by myself, like I don't like going back and watching the stuff in the episodes that I'm in. I don't like
Oh,
going
okay.
back and watching my tapes if I don't have to, because I am very judgmental of myself. And when it's just you see yourself a very different way than everybody else sees yourself. And it's and we, like, especially with this job for me, the jobs that I've gotten have always been the ones that I didn't think I was going to get based on my tapes. So for me, that was a clear of like, don't watch your tapes. Don't think about it. Don't
want to jinx it.
Yeah, it used to take me like an hour to tape something. And now I do it. I try to do it at least in like three takes and be done and then never look at it again.
Oh, yeah.
So if you were sitting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you were just sitting on the couch and all of a sudden Star Trek Discovery season 4 came on, you wouldn't watch it.
Oh, I'd turn it off. I'd turn it off. Which is, I love watching other people's scenes. I love watching everybody else's work. I just can't
skip forward your bits.
Yeah. I can't comfortably watch myself.
It's one of the things that I've learned from doing the podcast, because obviously I have to edit all of these videos. And I hate the sound of my own voice. And to listen to it over and over and over and over, you just kind of tune it out. But yeah, no, I fully, I'm with you on that one. I don't think I could, if I was in your shoes, watch myself over and over and over again.
So weird. It's such a weird thing. I don't think we're meant to do that as people.
Damn technology. Yeah. No. Okay. So, I mean, you've briefly touched upon it, but what's the atmosphere like on set with cast and crew? Because, I mean, those sets are stunning.
They're beautiful. They're insane. I've said this a lot, but I always repeat it because it never changed. But I don't know that I'll ever be lucky enough to get to work with a cast quite like this one. Yeah. And I think the same extends to our crew. We had just the most like devoted and excited group of people on those sets and around those sound stages. And this would be like, you know, when we are on the ship or in a sound stage, it's like 200, 300 people around there. And it's a lot of folks and no one goes unnoticed and no one goes unrecognized. And I think we all attribute a lot of that to Sonequa because she is, again, I don't think I'll get to work with a better number one ever, but like she, I don't know where she gets the energy from, but she will use all of her energy to make sure that everybody in that room or around that space feels seen and recognized and acknowledged and like a part of everything. She will take the time to go and say good morning to every single person in that room, ask them questions, ask how their day was, their families. Like she, I don't know where she has the energy to do all of that. Cause she also, you know, had two kids during the show.
Yeah, so it's right. Like,
I don't understand. But like, it was such a good, cause that's who you follow. You follow, you know, the example of your number one, and we could not have had someone more perfect in that position as like a leader and someone to, you know, follow the direction of, because she made it warm and welcoming and inviting, and she made sure it didn't feel like there were people in the corner who were not important. There was none of that. There were no people on our set who were like, you know, under or unimportant, because that just, she made it not exist. So for that reason, I think everyone just showed up with a lot of warmth every day, and you could kind of go to whoever you was around and you would get like good energy from them, which is really lucky on a set that big. I think days as long as we had and shoots as long as we had for a season. Mm-hmm.
And I think that also comes across on camera as well.
I hope so.
No, I think it definitely, I mean, when you look at, you know, when you look at Sonequa on screen, you can tell that she's got that energy, that positivity, even if it's a horrible scene, you know, it's always, always spot on.
Yeah.
So no, jealous is all I'm going to say on that one.
Well, I think it too. I mean, we say this a lot about Trek, obviously, but I think for Discovery, when it came out, you know, it was kind of opening up the gates to this new era, right, of Trek. And everybody was, all eyes were on it. You definitely got a sense of the camaraderie that existed there with the people. And yeah. I think you catch on to that, I think, as a viewer very quickly, if a cast is vibing early on. And I think it comes across the screens quite well. I think if anyone doesn't see that, they're watching the wrong show.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, it is a is a very special group of people. That's the saddest bit for me, because I think without knowing that we were going to end, I think somehow, I think somehow still it made sense, like within the context of the writing and the season, which I think was lucky. We got really lucky with that, and we got writers. So there was something, you know, that felt okay about, if this has to be the last season, this kind of makes sense and it's okay. But yeah, not getting to work with those people.
But do you see them outside of work now?
I do, yeah. I do when I can. And thank God that this universe and this franchise is a part of like the convention world, because that hopefully, I mean, I'm hoping that like that continues in the future, because that's a really great opportunity for us to see each other.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us are from, you know, different places. We're not all based in the same place, but whenever we are in the same location, that's always, there's always the first people that I text and make sure that I set something up with, because they feel very much like family to me.
That's awesome. And I think that goes throughout Trek as a whole. You look at the TNG cast, you look at the DS9 cast, you look at the Voyager cast, they are all their own little families, and they all see each other outside, and they, you know, they all live their lives together, which I think that's a very unique thing to Trek.
I think so too. Something that lasts that long and they stay close that long.
So what are yours? Sorry, let me rephrase that again. What are you, some of your favorite moments from Discovery, and it can be from any of the three seasons you've been in, and if you need a second, we can go first.
I have we've just done so much press that I have some like immediately in my head, and definitely, I mean, the third and fourth episodes of season three for me are like, like Adira's introduction are probably some of the most special things I've ever been a part of, and that's gonna last a long time. But there was a very little moment, and it was like a 5-second shot that was put into the episode, but it was just me by myself in the Jeffries tube. That was like, I think the first day I worked, and it was the end of that day, and they took me to a different soundstage that was completely empty. And they were like,
go in this tube earlier.
Yeah, because the stairs up to the tube are on our ship, which is like the ship that is built and there. And then they were like, the actual tube, you gotta come with us. And it was a completely separate, just a very small tube. And they were like 20 of us in the room, and it was middle of the night. And it was so cool. It was just, the tube, there was not much, I don't think there was that much VFX added afterwards. Like the tube was really beautifully lit up inside, and I just got to sit inside of it. And the camera just slowly came in from the other side of the tube. And it was kind of like a weird space MRI, but it was really good. And I love that so much. And I love that shot so much, because that was...
Tube you're hiding in?
Yeah, and that, okay. I think it's, that's why, I think that's the first time that the camera sees Adira by themselves, in a moment of not putting on a front, because they do put on quite a big front when they step on that ship. So I think that is the first moment that they are alone, and I like it a lot.
The thing I love in that episode is Stamets' little rant about that poxy little tween with her technology and this, that, and the other. It just gets me every time.
I think Mary had to say something like tween menace or something.
That
really made her laugh. I think it was that. I remember it really well.
The tempo of the dialogue sometimes, it warrants so many rewatches just to catch every little thing they say, because there's some great, just, you know, little blips that are, just, they make you laugh.
I mean, look, Jet Reno and Stamets together are a lethal force. I mean, let's face it, Tig is Tig. She's incredible. Some of my favorite parts of those episodes are just those random little witty remarks that she just comes up with against Stamets. They're brilliant.
It's so great. And I've never been more nervous to work with somebody in my life so far. Yeah, because I love, I'm such a big comedy fan, and I love Tig, and I've loved Tig for so long. Yeah. And I went into it being like, I'll never be on set with Chig. And then it did happen a few times, and she's just as special as you think that she would be. And weird and dry. And like, it's so coming from the complete opposite of like maybe the most anxious a person could possibly be, like trying to see, like having very short conversations and interactions, but in my brain, the only thing was like, does she like me? All that I had going on. But I adore her. She's so funny and loving, and she like cares so much for her family, which is so sweet. Yeah.
So, Jody, what is one of your favorite moments from Discovery?
So it's so funny. I was just thinking about this yesterday, and I have a real fondness for the last episode of season three. Is that the I lost the title. I'm terrible with titles. Oh, The
Oh, it's
Hope
here.
Is You. Yeah, part two. And I was thinking about Adira's role in that episode about kind of really going off on their own and taking charge, going out to protect members of the crew without, abiding by protocol or asking permission. And I thought that was I liked that moment for them. I think that's such a turning point for the character. And I think that episode overall is just it says a lot without having to say anything but keeping the story moving forward. And I think that's a special season finale in the whole world of Trek, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really loved that episode as well,
I
and I
think
agree.
mine is in Sukal, which is when Adira beams on and Culber sees Gray for the first time. That
Yeah.
to me tears me up every time.
Good. It's so sweet.
I
And
love
we're
that.
so excited.
I think the other one from that as well is, and I think one of the things that Trek does really well is it doesn't make a song a dance about anything. It just gets on with it. I mean, the moment that instantly comes to mind is when Adira says to Stamets that they want to be referred to as they. Doesn't make a
Yeah.
song or dance about it, just gets on with it, says it, moves on. Other shows will drag that on for episodes upon episodes, and
Yeah.
it really frustrates me when that happens. This, it does it right, as far as I'm concerned. And
I
it also goes back
agree.
to that really old saying, once and done.
I fully agree. I think that there are shows and characters where sometimes it warrants that being a continuing thing to come back to, and it makes sense. But for Trek and for that exact moment in Trek, where we again are in a period of time where that we don't know anything about, we are with a crew that we already know is very accepting and loving and familial. I don't know. It would have been weird to drag it out. And I'm really happy that the producers and writers were really wonderful with me in kind of letting me allowing me to give my input on what I wanted that scene to look like, and if I needed to change any of the language or add any language that I wanted to add, that was a possibility, which I don't think is really ever a, like a part of the conversation, sadly. But they did, want that to feel as authentic to me as possible, because of a lot of Adira's story really mirrored my own transition. So I think they won't like we all wanted to be very careful with that. And I think that was the only way we should have done it, which was you just say it once and then you don't ever have to say it again.
You just stole my question as well.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's
I will
great.
say though, it felt very natural for both characters in that moment. And I think that was important, right? I don't think Stamets is someone that's going to let things, he's a very science, right? Black or white kind of guy. And I felt that that was a beautiful moment.
I
To be
always make
honest.
fun of Anthony for the way he does. Oh, sorry.
No, go on. No, no, no.
Go.
I just always I make fun of him for the way that he did that, said that last line, part in that scene where he just is, because he always, that's just the way Stamets talks, but he was just like, okay. And that's right. Just constantly has that little thing. And it was so perfect. And I love it so much. Yeah.
I was going to say,
how that was an important scene for you, right? I mean, obviously, not just for the character, but for you as the actor.
Yeah. And, oh, God. Yeah.
And how much, like, did you know that was coming? Was that was going to be a part of the character storyline from the beginning for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the whole, that whole first season for me was really scary. And I had a lot of imposter syndrome because...
Sure.
And I've also like spoken about this before, but I was not out to anybody other than like two people when I started again, what period of time where I did not think I was going to get hired for anything. I think that like it was pretty like apparent probably that I was not cis, and to the point where my agent was like, hey, are you comfortable auditioning for non-binary roles? And I was like, yeah, but don't make a big thing out of it. And
then all of a sudden, here you are, the first non-binary actor on Star Trek.
Yeah. I get like, but it's such a twofold period of time for me because it was terrifying and I felt very much like, you know, it shouldn't be me. I shouldn't be like at the forefront of this because I'm still in a place where I'm just learning about myself and like, you know, what if I'm wrong or what if I'm not what I think I am and all of that stuff that's coming up and suddenly being like, well, you're going to be put in this position where everyone's going to look at you for reference as, you know, and, you know, someone to look up to in terms of, you know, non-binary representation. And it was like at the time terrifying and really stressful. And now looking back on it, I'm very grateful for it because I think that a lot of my transness and my gender identity got really shoved backwards in terms of my progress when I was very young. So I think it would have taken me a lot longer to get to where I am now had I not had this show to like,
yeah,
not push me, but kind of give me people who helped me get to where I need to get, because I didn't have the community that I needed at the time to feel like, to feel validated at all. You know, and I think I don't think I would have had top surgery or been on testosterone or been as far as I am at this point had I not done that, which is like, now I see it as something I'm very grateful for, even though it was very scary. And I'm glad I also got to be that representation of like someone going through that, because there's not much representation, but what I'd seen is like the image that people like to put out is somebody that's like 100% sure of themselves and like very... A lot of the times it seems like at the end goal or like, you know, at the finish line.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
There's nothing in between. It's just.
Exactly. Yeah. And I now feel a lot better with myself recognizing how fluid I feel a lot of the time, knowing that like I might not have a finish line and that's fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
To be honest, I admire you so much for that.
Absolutely.
I mean, coming out is one of the hardest things anybody will do, and essentially to do it on television.
So
is
fun.
Incredible.
So fun and good.
Honestly.
So normal.
I don't know, though. I have to say, like, I absolutely agree with Mike, but at the same time, like, I guess some things happen for a reason, right? Like,
yeah.
That is always something I kind of lean into a little bit personally, but I think for you, especially this, my goodness, this role that you weren't expecting at a time in your life, you weren't expecting it, but then also to give you kind of something to personally grow with. That's just amazing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel very lucky for it.
You handled it very well. I don't know that if we didn't have this vastness of social media and everything at our fingertips to kind of know your story along the way, I think people would have looked at the show and thought, you know, they've got it going. They understand who they are as a person and who this character is. So you did very well from the outsider's perspective. Yeah.
I also think it helps as well. Having people like Wilson, like Anthony around you, I think is a massive, massive help.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, for me, especially, you know, growing up, seeing people like Wilson on television was a massive thing.
Yeah.
Heck, still seeing Wilson on television is a massive thing because he's lovely. I mean,
Yeah.
I remember briefly I met him because he was sitting next to you in London.
Yeah.
And we had this one because he was the producer on Visible, the Apple
Yes, yeah, he
TV
was.
series, which was incredible. And he got to share his story on there. And I remember reaching out to him on Twitter. We spoke a bit, and then we had a little heart to heart in London. He made me cry. I will never forgive him for it. No, I'm joking.
Absolutely.
But he is just one of those people where you can talk, and he will listen, and he will help if he can. The panel that the two of you did
I'm
in
never gonna
London,
forget that. That was
I
crazy.
was sobbing through most of
I was stopping. I
that.
was
Actually, I
crying.
think I have a video of you sobbing. I'm joking.
I'm never forgetting that. That was an insane. That was crazy.
That was an incredible panel. And I think also having Andrew Robinson on there as well. That, I mean, I was very fortunate that, last week's episode that went out on the podcast was Andrew Robinson. So I was very lucky that I got to meet him again on that one. But yeah, just that panel was, I hope there's videos of it somewhere online because I think
So too.
everybody should watch it.
I mean, it was for me, it was what made it was the people that showed up to, I
Oh,
think.
that it made me laugh that. I mean, I spoke to a couple of people and they were like, oh, we're going to put it on this side stage because we don't think we're going to get many people for this
Yeah.
representation in Star Trek. The pretty much the entire convention shut down and nearly
Yeah.
everybody. And but they only put out, I think it was 100 seats.
Yeah, people were standing and sitting everywhere.
Yeah.
There was nowhere to go.
The whole convention pretty much ground to a halt whilst
Crazy.
this, and it was incredible. It really was.
Yeah.
I wasn't even there, and I'm getting chills just thinking about it. So that's
I'll try and
it
find
was
some
nuts.
video for you.
Yeah, it was. I think that was part of it. It was that they kind of the convention didn't expect there to be such a big turnout. I think we expected it to be a smaller panel. So I think like from the second that I walked out and saw everybody, I was like, oh my God, this is gonna be
That's
very
gonna be daunting
special.
though, at the same time.
It was very overwhelming. It was also like such a lull in the day where we were all so tired. And we were like, it's okay, we've got this little panel. We walked out and we were like, oh, wait. Oh, no. This is crazy. But it was so, I remember Wilson like grabbing my hand really tightly because he was, oh, he always is the first to get very emotional talking about these things. And he was like really struggling to keep himself together because of how much he cares about all of this and how much he, you know, has devoted his life to
100%.
this kind of progress. So, yeah.
Well, and I think that's important too. Like, obviously, the expectation for that panel by convention, folks, like that just sets a tone for the impact of Discovery right there. There's the need for that. In my opinion, Discovery is the Star Trek show that literally has been the first series to show what the meaning behind Star Trek is. I feel the other shows alluded to it in some way previously, but no one ever kind of like took hammer to nail and said, here it is. This is what the future can look like, or should look like. Yeah,
100%.
I really commend Alex and Michelle and everybody who's, you know, a part
Yeah.
of pushing forward because it they really did take every moment of like looking back at the history of Trek, moments where, you know, people would make assumptions and they would want to stick with those assumptions. And it would be like, it would be, you know, headcanon for fans and stuff like that. But they took like every single one of those moments and were like, yes, it's correct. Yes, we were going all in with that. And solidified things that were, like you said, yeah, like you said, previously kind of there and alluded to, but never kind of like put their foot down. And that's a
Well,
very scary thing to do. So.
Well, I mean, yeah, I get it. Like I'm a bit of a dinosaur, but like I was a teenager during the 80s and
Hang on a
a
second, hang
bit
on.
of it.
Every episode, we somehow manage to age ourselves.
So here I
And it,
am.
and me
Here
and
I
Sho have this, we have this
am.
wonderful thing where every episode we age ourselves really badly. I mean, I'm not that old. I mean,
No.
and to be fair, my fiance is the same age as you, Blue. So,
Yeah, I don't know what
so,
either of you are talking
but,
about.
and to be fair, Jody, you can't be that much older than I am. So let's just
Oh, you're a
no.
saint. Make sure you get a gift in the mail for that.
Sorry, you were saying.
But I just like, there's, I think when they, for the writers and Kurtzman for putting Discovery out there with that mindset that it was going to be this diverse storytelling, diverse cast. That wasn't happening in the 80s and the 90s Trek. And there was a lot of alluding, and
Yeah.
a lot of headcanon that came out of all of those
Look at
shows,
Garak and
obviously. But
Bashir. There's a lot of alluding there.
so much alluding. But I think it was a very brave step for them to sit down and say, okay, we're going to put Trek out there again after being gone for way too long. And but we're going to do it this way.
Yeah.
And it was necessary. And at the same time, as I look at the doors that it has opened for the episodes and series that have come since that has happened. And I am excited for the future of Trek because of it. And I hope that you understand what a significant part you had in that as a part of the show. And I don't know that you can easily do that on a daily basis, but at some point you can look back and go, oh, hey, I was a part of that. I helped make that happen. And because I think you're a very big part of it, and it's appreciated.
Thank
Very
you.
much
That
so.
I think it's still sitting, like it still comes in little bouts of, yeah, I don't know. I definitely going off of what you said, I'm also glad that this was with the idea of bringing Trek back to start with this. I'm also very glad they did that because they could have started with something that was very traditionally Trek and
Absolutely.
not stepping out in the way that Discovery did, but no, this was, it was a big risk, and I'm very grateful that they chose to do that. And I think none of it really hit. I mean, it did hit. All of it was hitting. I was again coming out to my family while I was
You have
doing this.
black and blue
So it's all
afterwards.
very, it's all hitting very deeply. But I think the impact, I get the impact really strongly of what it's doing and what it's done and what Adira and Gray have done with the every once in a while getting a message from. I obviously like communicate a lot with fans who are trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming, and that is very close to my heart. Something that hits me really deeply is when it's parents
Oh, wow, yeah.
of trans kids and non-binary kids who, and these can sometimes be very young kids who would be. Why it hits me is because it would have been in my position when I was younger, where I did basically come out to my parents as trans multiple times without having the word transgender, as a kid. But there was nobody around me who I think even knew what that meant, and for that reason, everything had to kind of get pushed back inside and into a corner. So when I get those messages, it really like breaks me in half because that is. It's insane to know that like you're doing something that would have directly helped you as a kid. That's bizarre because that's what it does. It gives their kids, it validates their kids as they're seeing on this, big TV show, this massive franchise, these characters who are non-binary, who are trans, who are talking about their experience, and it immediately validates something about their kids for them, where maybe they might not have anybody else in their community who has that experience. And if you don't know
Absolutely.
anybody, it's very hard to, it's scary. I know it's like it sucks sometimes to be trans and be a kid, but it also is probably very scary to be a parent of a trans child and not feel
So I
like you
suppose
have
it's
that
then
communication.
how, from a parent's perspective, it's probably very new. And they don't know how to react to it.
No, and it
And
like oh sorry.
no, go on.
No, as hard as it was for my parents, and I think we're all th like three of us still processing this because there's a lot of grief for me of not having that validation, but there's also so much grief on their end that I see of how awful they feel that they did not, that didn't, they didn't have anyone there, because they did go to people and ask questions and try to get help and try to understand what was going on with me and what I was trying to tell them. Yeah. And nobody around them had enough information to kind of steer them in the right direction other than like, it'll pass.
Yeah.
So, you know, they feel a lot of weight around that. So I can't imagine how scary it is. And especially right now too, with everything going on, how scary it is to have a child, but for like the ones who support your kids, thank God, because that is first and foremost, the only thing that you need is your parents' support. Like,
I mean,
top of the list.
I remember for me, a family member telling another family member to get over themselves, because I've not changed as a person. Just because the fact I've come out as gay does not mean I'm any way, shape or form a different person. I'm the same person I was yesterday. I'm the same person I'll be tomorrow. It just so happens to be that I like men.
Yeah.
It doesn't change who you are.
No.
At the end of the day. And I think that, and when I heard that, I went, that pretty much, for me anyway, and this is my personal opinion, but that hits the nail on the head. Nothing has changed. They're still the same person they always have been and always will be.
Yeah, because if you know, when someone learns that you are part of the LGBTQ community, if they turn you away after that, it's not like you're turning away the new person that's come out. You're turning away the friend or the family that you've had.
Yeah.
You're suddenly just being like, actually, never mind, to the person that you already know. There is no, you know, difference there.
Yeah. So. No, exactly.
I hope that you can find that time empowering when you hear from those, you know, parents and these people that are kind of living the story that you didn't get to live, right? I mean, and I hope you can find that. I know it can be overwhelming, I'm sure, but wow, that just speaks to the impact of your work and the show's work. So, bravo.
Let's talk about Adira and Tilly.
Yeah.
Because Adira and Tilly's relationship, for me, is incredible. I the way that they bounce off of each other so well. How much fun is that to play?
It is my favorite. Scenes with Mary were my favorite thing. Yeah. And they were something that I was hoping for from the beginning, from when I met Mary, because I felt that.
Oh, she's lovely.
The best human being. But I immediately felt like the way that she approached her work and the way that I approached my work had something that was very similar and could be really fun to play with. And is also very much how we are conversationally. And so I was like praying from the start to get to have some kind of a relationship between Adira and Tilly, because I knew it was there in my head and I was just kind of hoping that it would come to fruition.
Yeah.
And then when it did, I think they knew, like the whole team knew as well, once they put us both in front of a camera and just kind of let us do whatever we needed to do, we're kind of like, oh no, this is good. And I was so happy because those were some of my favorite things to film. They were so much fun. We both like got to improvise a lot, and it was just like, I think it brought out a different side of Adira and a different side for Tilly. That was also really special, and I don't think they have with anybody else on the crew. So, I love those scenes.
I was going to say, so I think my favorite episode for that is All Is Possible. So season 4, episode 4, which is the one where you crash on the ice planet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That I love that episode. Because I think it shows the kind of person that Tilly is, because I think, I mean, look, if you take it back 3 years ago, she was a cadet thrown massively into the deep end. And now all of a sudden is a lieutenant going, and now you're going to take all of these cadets out. Good luck. It's just like, So do you feel Tilly is a lot of herself in Adira?
I think so. I think like 50-50, because I think they, are very different. I think there's something a lot more stubborn about Adira at the start, that I mean, much less like kind of going with it if it needs to be gone with. Sometimes, yes, but I don't know. I think I really like the way that they're different in their like beginnings on the ship, but I don't know. I think Tilly just treats Adira more like an adult than anybody else does. I think Tilly gives Adira a lot more, like, doesn't baby them, doesn't coddle them, in a way that I think Adira loves, because doesn't get that response in many places. That's the best way I can think about it.
Well, and I think too, in that episode that Mike referenced, where the shuttle crashed on the ice planet, and it was just kind of, we got to figure this out, right? I think that there was a lot of lessons learned between Adira and Tilly in that episode. And it was kind of like it shifted from being the mentee mentor kind of vibe to like Tilly kind of learns, like, oh, I could do this, like, full time. And I think Adira realizes, I can be independent and still learn and grow in this Starfleet world. And I thought that was really kind of a great kind of B story to what was happening in the chaos of that episode, and really helped propel the characters really forward. And that was nice and well done,
Yeah,
obviously.
I love our producers and our writers for that episode, because I agree. I think it was really pivotal for them, and it even being like the B story of that episode, I think for both of us it was really, really important. I
Yeah,
love
because
it.
after that, both characters kind of, you can tell they've sort of pushed through it, and they both see things slightly differently. Which I think has also had a massive impact on how the rest of the season progressed. And now the two characters are just bouncing off of each other. It's great. I mean, to me, you probably haven't seen it, but episode 2
Oh,
of season 5.
yes.
Spoiler alert for anyone that hasn't seen it, but there is a whole scene where they're trying to figure out the old energy barrier,
Oh,
and they're just
yes.
bouncing ideas off and off of each other, and then all of us, it just hit the nail on the head. And I hope not. I don't need an answer from this, but I hope we get to see more of that in season 5. I don't need an answer, because I don't want you to give away any spoilers.
It's just
But
an
I
amazing
remember it.
tempo of dialogue. Like the tempo of the back and forth is
It's so
not
fun.
many. Oh my gosh. It's fun to watch. I can't imagine working
It's
that
so
way. That has to be amazing.
I think we got a huge like benefit and really lucky thing also with the cast, that so many of our cast comes from theater. And there was, I mean, and all of us are very much like theater kids, like that kind of person. And I don't, there's so much play that can come with that. And getting to translate that onto a show like this, that in a lot of ways, the way that it's made is extremely technical. Getting to bring that in and have moments of that was probably why those scenes were my favorite.
They're great. Just.
I always wondered how that translates for people who are, grown up on the stage or have a preference to, stage acting. Like, and when you're creating a television show, there's no instant response. There's not that connection with a captive audience, right? Like, you don't have that, and you kind of, things aren't always shot in order, right? Things are very picked up, dropped wherever. And I'm a musician by trade, and when we perform, there's instant response unless you're sitting in a studio or whatever. But I can't imagine like having to do that, what you do as an actor in a studio on a set, and piecemealing this bigger piece together. And I think that has to be a very stark contrast to what you get from a stage.
It is very weird. And yeah, the only response that you are getting and looking for is the person you're talking to and the people who are with you. So it's
And the director, are you going, is that okay?
at times, yes. And it's sort of They were so great with us, though. Again, why I loved our crew so much, that they, the, a lot of those scenes with Mary, like, I doubt that any of our takes looked the same. And the fact that they let us do that and let us play that way and probably set up a lot of the shots and so that we could play that way and it didn't need to be, you know, so exactly the same was so nice, because then we did have that freedom to do that.
So what you're saying is there's lots and lots and lots of alternate versions of all of these scenes that we haven't seen.
Probably.
Paramount, we need a bloopers reel of every single one of those scenes. All of them. Just find that one massive long file, please.
I want all of the bloopers of every season so badly, because there's so much good stuff.
With that cast, that blooper reel.
Oh.
I can't imagine. It'd be epic.
There's so much good. I hope they like keep releasing them forever, because there's a lot of it.
Yeah. Mm.
All right, we're gonna have to go hunting now, because obviously I know there'll be cut scenes from like the Blu-rays and that, but
yeah. Oh yeah,
gonna have to go hunting for sure. So let's briefly ditch off of Star Trek for a second. Starfield.
Oh yes.
How did that come about?
She's like, oh yeah.
That was
Danny Garcia.
Yeah.
I love that game. I'm a proper sci-fi Starfield nerd, so
I haven't gotten to play it. I don't have a PC. I don't have the right like stuff to play it. I'm so frustrated.
I'm an Xbox guy, so it's fine.
I need to play it. That was wild. I wanted, like, pretty early on into working on Discovery, I really wanted to, because another dream of mine was to do animation and do voiceover. And like, I would love to do, you know, like kids TV, or I would love to do like English dubs. That would be really fun. And so, yeah, that came up. God, it would have been maybe 2021, I think, when I did that. And it was all pretty quick. It was fairly like so much of the game had already been completed by that point. And they were really just finding voices and like fine tuning at that point. And so I think stepping in at that point was a little daunting, but they made it very seamless and were really kind and wonderful. And I think the scariest part doing that kind of stuff is like, you don't get to see what stuff looks like a lot of the time.
Yes.
If at all. So doing that, I think was very scary, not knowing what any of it was going to look like. And that's definitely something I've had to get used to in voiceover of kind of handing over trust and also asking questions where I need to ask questions. I really want to play the game.
I'm guessing it's quite a different... Is it just a case of literally just reading lines? Because I'm guessing there's nothing to really act off of. Because I mean, guessing with animation, you'd obviously get, you know, you get plates to work off of, but...
Yeah, it depends on the project and how they want to do it, because there are, like, of course, with mocap, you're basically doing it, and a lot of the times there is, you know, you have... That's like you're playing like you're on stage. But with just voiceover, and this was just voiceover for me for this project, I was just by myself in a booth. Right. And I had and the engineers in the room, but like also the director was on the Zoom and kind of giving notes and like talking me through each. They kind of give you as much to go off as they possibly can, which is really helpful, rather than just be like, here's the page and read it, which some things do. Yep. But
right.
That was very much, they would give me as much context as they could possibly give me for every individual bit that I was having to say. And I think that just spoke a lot to how much they care about this game and how much like love and time went into it, because they worked on it for a very long time. And they knew it. They didn't have to look stuff up. They were like, this is everything that we can tell you before, what's happening just before, what's happening after, where you are. They knew all of that. Like it was, you know, their life. So that was immensely helpful, because it's a massive world and a massive game.
Oh, it's huge.
So having that context was really beneficial. Yeah.
Also, with something like Starfield as well, there were so many other Star Trek actors that were in it
There were,
as
yeah.
well. And it is, it's quite, I purposely stayed away from a lot of the media on the game. So I didn't really watch anything or listen or read anything about the game because all I knew is I wanted to play it, obvious, and then just went right straight into it. And then I'm listening going, that voice sound really familiar. And then after I kind of got through it, I then went, oh, it was Armin Shimerman. Well, that makes sense. Oh, it was Tim Russ. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I also didn't know till afterwards how many alumni and how many people are on there, which is great.
So if you got approached to do another game, would you?
Oh gosh, yeah, I think it's so fun. It's so fun because it's also like, again, a big overachiever, but it's also a challenge. And I love voiceover in that way of, yeah, so much of it is coming from you and has to come internally. And when you're standing still in a little box, and I love that it you have to work that hard to get there. So yeah, I would love to keep doing it.
Well, there we go. Gearbox, come on, Star Trek Online. We need an
Yeah.
Adira storyline in Star Trek Online.
Oh, that is so fun.
Well, we've had a Stamets storyline, so I think we need a Tilly and Adira storyline.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Oh, I
To
know
be fair,
Enoch's done the.
I sat there last night going, oh, it's disco season. I should probably get rid of this Constitution 3 class and switch back. So I'm currently now rocking the Discovery with the correct uniform. Also, how are the uniforms? How are the costumes?
They're so, I feel like exactly what you expect them to be. They feel very like professional. They feel very, because they're, I mean, it's a suit, so it's fitted, but it's thick. It's like very thick material. I don't think any of us have been in space suits, but it's like, I don't know. It feels very professional. It feels very like, I guess what you would hope one of those suits would feel like. It feels like that. But gosh, yeah, I am someone who likes wearing like garbage bin size clothing. So it was like, I've always felt like a little claustrophobic, but no, it does kind of put you in the space. It kind of gets you there, which like good costuming does.
Sure,
Yeah.
yeah.
Did you get to keep your Tricom badge?
No,
Oh.
I asked so like I really just like looking as sad as I possibly could. Didn't want to keep it so badly. And I get why, and I know that they do like really nice things with a lot of their costuming and but no, I did get the back of my chair. I did get my like Adira backing
Good.
of my
I
chair.
was gonna say, as long as you
Oh, yeah.
stole something from the set, I think you're fine. I remember reading a story that after season two, Anson wanted his uniform and badge, and he was told no. And then they went up an auction, so he bought them.
Oh,
If
wow.
you can go that way, I do that one. That's great.
But yeah, he was so adamant that he wanted his because he was the it was the gold version of the Discovery, the
Wow.
season one two uniform,
Oh my
and
God.
the Enterprise badge. He wanted those and he was told no, and then they went up on prop store and auction, so he bought them.
He bought them.
If anyone sees my badge up at some point, let me know. I really want
We will be on the hunt, don't you worry.
We will. Now that you've said that, there'll be eyeballs all over.
It was just one of those things where it was like, surely we get our badges, right? And they were like,
Yeah, surely they must
sorry,
have
but we
made
can't.
so many of them that one missing wouldn't have been an issue.
I don't know that there were a lot of copies. I think like, I mean, they were beautiful and like really, really, really finely and well made. I
I
don't know
mean,
that there were that many copies.
I've got the fan sets replica,
Oh, really? Okay.
but yeah, I've seen some of the photos of it of them close up, and they are stunning.
They're very careful with them. Like the second we are wrapped, there is somebody behind you being like, give me your badge. Give me your badge right
It's
now.
because it's easy to pocket as well, isn't
Oh yeah, no, you can
it?
lose that so easily. No, they were very, very careful with them. So I don't know if there's many.
I was gonna say, there
that's
must have been
wild.
though, because you've obviously got all of the primary cast have all got, because they've all got different ranks on them, haven't they? And then everyone in the background has obviously got one.
I wonder if there's maybe.
I was gonna say, unless those are plastic or something, because they're not close
Oh,
up.
maybe. Maybe.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay, but anyway, we will be on the hunt. So if we see a badge,
Absolutely.
we will definitely find it and buy it
Thank
and
you.
ship it to you. So if you had to sum up season five in a single word, what would it be?
No pressure.
No pressure. And that's not the difficult question I was going to ask
I
either. No, you one more yet.
thought it was. adventure, I think adventure. And I say that quickly because that was sort of something that Michelle would throw at us throughout the season. That was something that they were aiming for this season in particular, was they wanted that really big sense of adventure, that like Trek has done so well since it started. That's the energy that they wanted to like carry through the whole thing. So, yeah.
I'm going to skip over that one because we've already asked that one. So, what do you hope to do next?
Ooh. I want to, well, I want to do animation. I really want to keep doing voiceover. I would love to do like children's TV. I would love to do English dubs of anime. I would love doing any of that. And I really want to work in film. I want to keep going, and I want to work in, I mean, really like independent film. Ideally, I love working in groups that feel, I just like feeling like a bigger part of the project. I like when it feels shared, and I like that when everyone is really like has the same image that we want to achieve artistically, and everyone has a say of what's going into it. For that reason, I like smaller groups. I think that Discovery somehow did that with a massive group, which was really nice. But I think that's rare. So I really want to do film. Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks.
Right?
Brew wants to do film. So if you had the opportunity to come back and do Star Trek again from a different show, would you?
Oh, God, yeah.
And would you do a full Doug Jones and go complete and utter makeup? Let's face it takes a special kind of someone to do what Doug does.
It takes a Doug to do what Doug does. I don't think anybody else can do what Doug does, honestly. Oh man, I would do it. Oh, maybe I would do it as like a guest role, or if it was maybe like pared down prosthetics. I don't know that I could ever do that level of prosthetic work, because that is, I mean, other people have say this all the time, but like Doug really does know. He just kind of zones out in his rest moments, and like he, I mean, he, it's insane what he goes through to do that. And I don't think I could do it. But I would love to be like a creature. I would love to do like creature work like that. I don't know if I could do it to the extent that he does, because he's, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, action Saru
All
all the
the
way.
way. In those shoes, let's be
Oh,
clear.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's be
The hoof
clear.
shoes.
I mean, I
Like,
know that there have been countless women before in Trek that have to run up and down those hallways with heels on,
yeah.
but I think this is a whole new level with the Saru shoes.
I don't think people are meant to, they're not meant to do that at all, ever, for any reason. And the fact that he didn't break his ankle every 2 weeks is astounding to me.
Right. Well, the other person that I really love to know how they've done it is his stunt double. Because
Right.
in this
Yeah.
week's episode of The Ready Room with Wil Wheaton, there was a little bit of the behind the scenes of the super fast running scene that they did on the planet in episode two, where he's literally on like this rubber mat that's being dragged by an SUV with him sprinting in Saru's shoes, in those hoof
Yeah.
shoes. How the hell you do that without killing
Yeah.
yourself? I have no idea. So hat off to him.
Right.
Yeah, big time. Yes.
Anyway, Blue, this has been awesome. So before I give you the last question,
Oh no.
Jody, is there anything else you would like to ask?
Oh no, I think we covered a variety of topics
We have indeed.
today.
So this question won't take any thought whatsoever.
Gosh.
Blue, what does Star Trek mean to you?
Ugh. Ooh. For me, because of the experience that I have had with it, I think for me, like acceptance and a little bit of bravery, would probably quantify all of it best, in the way that it's been in my life and how I've experienced Trek stepping into it. Had to be a lot of acceptance and a little bit and bravery, a little bit of bravery.
That's lovely. I love that. That's awesome. Well, Blue,
And definitely you did that, right? I mean, most
100%.
100%. And we thank you for it.
Thank you.
Blue, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for coming on this week.
Thank you.
Jody, thank you for coming on this week as well.
Happy.
And
Happy
for
to do
everybody
so.
else watching, listening, thank you for watching and listening. And until next time, live long and prosper.